This is episode 20 of IDRA Class Notes.
So here we are. I think you were going to talk about first and second languages and so forth. Here comes another language, the universal language of science and math that will be foundational to technology. And in this world today that is shrinking rapidly fast, we're a global economy. We're an information-driven economy. Science and math are extremely important to the well-being of our country, our world, our children, our future.
Welcome to the Class Notes podcast by the Intercultural Development Research Association. I'm Christy Goodman, and I really want to thank you for listening. In this podcast series, we explore issues facing education today and provide strategies for teachers and administrators to better serve every student. We'd love to hear your thoughts, questions, or suggestions, and there will be details at the end of this podcast on how you can contact us. We've also set up an email alert to let you know when an episode of Class Notes is available. So if you're not subscribing to this podcast, our email alerts can help you stay up to date. All you have to do is go to our website and you can sign up there. For today's episode, we have a presentation that was made at our annual IDRA La Semana del Niño Early Childhood Educators Institute in April. The speaker is Dr. Rosalinda Barrera on the topic of science in early childhood bilingual classrooms. Dr. Barrera is Dean of the College of Education at Texas State University in San Marcos. She is a former classroom teacher and public school administrator and has a doctorate in curriculum and instruction. She has published two books and numerous professional articles addressing the language and literacy education of linguistically and culturally diverse learners. For this presentation, she was speaking in San Antonio to a room of early childhood educators and center directors. I want to let you know that the PowerPoint presentation that she refers to is posted on our show notes, though she does quote from it and describe what is on each slide, so you won't miss any content if you're only able to listen right now. We also have provided in our show notes several of the resources that she has suggested. We're providing the first 23 minutes or so of her presentation that was 90 minutes total. And in this first section of her speech, she gives an excellent picture of the need for schools to actively integrate science instruction into the earliest grades for second language learners. Enjoy.
Buenos dias.
Buenos dias.
Good morning to everybody. It's still morning. Right before lunch, I had you at a time when hopefully you had snacks before coming in here, because I hear that you had an active morning, and so it's really, really good to be here. I have to begin by thanking the people who got me here. Jose is one of them, Cuca and Lalo. I value their long contributions to education, and I really appreciate being invited here. I couldn't make it last year, but I'm so happy to be here this year. I've also learned that some of you are from different parts of the country, that there's a group of teachers here from Michigan. You'll raise your hand. That there are some people here from Louisiana.
Louisiana.
Ah, okay. And then different parts of Texas.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to try to make my talk as pertinent and relevant to the nation, and not just Texas, but Texas will be at the center of my conversation with you this morning. And I hope it will be a conversation. Even though I stand up here, I hope that you will feel comfortable raising your hands and asking questions. Although I do have a set amount of time, and sometimes it's better to reserve questions for the end, and I'll allow for a question and answer period. I also brought a wonderful young woman with me today from my office, Melanie Zapata, who helped to put this PowerPoint presentation together. We're going to try to do a PowerPoint within a PowerPoint and talk about technology. You know that your kids and your classrooms and your children know more about technology than you do. I feel the same way with Melanie. So she came with me today. And she and Charles have had a conversation about what to do. I want to talk to you about a very, very important topic today. Everything you've been told, this conference is probably very important. But this one really has implications for the future and for our well-being and our entire world. And that's the whole area of STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, and the importance that it holds, especially today, especially after 9/11, how those fields have become very, very important to us. And they're calling, I just said technology a while ago, and our children knowing more than we do, and so forth. So that's why STEM is even more critically important to us, because we're gonna have to do some catching up. I want to talk about integrating language and content in early bilingual science. And I want to talk to you about needs, opportunities, and challenges. I want to put the topic in a global context, first of all, then a national context, then a state context, probably. And invite us all to consider the biggest, broadest implications of the topic. So let's go to the next slide. This quote is from the Director of Corporate Affairs for Intel Corporation. And he notes the importance of science and math. Science and math are identified, called by him, as the universal language of technology. They drive technology and our standards of living. Unless our kids grow up knowing that universal language, they will not be able to compete. So here we are thinking we're going to talk about first and second languages and so forth. Here comes another language, the universal language of science and math that will be foundational to technology. And in this world today that is shrinking rapidly fast, we're a global economy, we're an information-driven economy, science and math are extremely important to the well-being of our country, our world, our children, our future. Richard Thapia from Rice University, mathematician, scientist, and so forth, relates this future to Hispanics in particular, which is going to be my central focus here today. He says, if we as Hispanics are not in the sciences, engineering, mathematics, we cannot be in technical leadership. And if we're not in leadership, we can't make decisions at the national level that can be favorable to all the people. If we don't change things, that will lead to a permanent underclass for Hispanics. Now, I'm of a generation and an age that I have seen several movements in science and math. I think back to Sputnik in the 50s, how that really energized and changed the science teaching landscape in the United States. Well, now there's another movement that we're feeling, and this is part of the reason for bringing science and math to the center of our curriculum and integrating it with the rest of the curriculum so that we don't have that scenario that's described here. This is a critical time for all of us, but especially more so for the nation's fastest growing and largest minority group still around, Hispanics. I'm going to talk about this book in just a few minutes. How many of you have seen it or bought it or read parts of it? The World is Flat by Thomas Friedman. Raise your hand if you've heard about it or read it. One or two people, okay. I'm going to tell you that all of us need to read this book. It's been on the best-selling list for at least a year, and the second edition is coming out. And I'll tell you why in just a minute. But the author of this book, Thomas Friedman, says that we're in the middle of a quiet crisis right now. Because it takes 15 years to create a scientist or an advanced engineer, starting from when that young man or woman gets hooked on science and math for the first time in elementary school, we should be embarking on an all hands on deck, no holds barred, no budget too large, crash program for science and engineering education immediately. The fact that we are not doing so is our own quiet crisis. Scientists and engineers don't grow on trees. They have to be educated through a long process because this really is rocket science. It's something complex and long. There have been a number of policymakers at the federal level talking about the teaching of reading is not really rocket science. The teaching of this is not rocket science. Well, Friedman takes that kind of language and says, it really is rocket science to produce scientists and engineers and mathematicians. And it's the fact that we're not doing it is our quiet crisis that can come back upon us pretty soon. In this book, Friedman talks about the flattening world, the fact that as the global economy comes to shape us, technological innovations such as computers have flattened the world and have allowed lots of people to participate in world events almost instantaneously. You've seen it in the last few weeks on television, and if you have the computer, internet, the news, the information, the way that we are looking at things in other parts of the world as if they were in our own backyards and neighborhoods. That's that kind of world, flattening world, that Friedman is talking about. And he talks about 10 things that flattened the world. The first one was 9/11. The second flattener was 8/9/95, when Netscape went public, the internet. Flattener 3, and these are words, I'm going to go down the list of flatteners and see how many of these words you know. Workflow software, open sourcing, outsourcing, offshoring, supply chaining, insourcing, informing, and then four things that he calls the steroids, and by that he's talking about digital, mobile, personal, and virtual. All of these words that now are part of our vocabulary that reflect that flattening world. And there's a paragraph in here where he says, he talks about these four, calls them steroids. By digital, thanks to the PC, Windows, Netscape, workflow revolution, all analog content and processes, everything from photography to entertainment to communication to word processing to architectural design to the management of my home lawn sprinkler system, are being digitized and therefore can be shaped, manipulated, and transmitted over computers, the internet, satellites, or fiber optic cable. By virtual, we mean that the process of shaping, manipulating, and transmitting the digitized content can be done at very high speeds with total ease so that you never have to think about it, thanks to all the underlying digital pipes, protocols, and standards that have now been installed. By mobile, we mean that thanks to wireless technology, all of this can be done from anywhere with anyone through any device and can be taken anywhere. And by personal, we mean that it can be done by you, for you, on your own device. So those four descriptors, digital, virtual, mobile, and personal. Your children are more familiar with those descriptors than you are at this particular point in time. And that's the kind of world that is going to continue to take shape, and it's going to require science, math, engineering, and technology. And our children cannot afford not to have those skills and those universal or that universal language to succeed in the world. We're not going to go back to another era. We are in a very different world. In science, the STEM fields are extremely important. Let me just take one of those flatteners, 9/11. 9/11 was spelled by many people in many different ways. I was at the University of Illinois at that time. The University of Illinois is the home of Netscape, and University of Illinois is a big recipient of dollars from the National Science Foundation. They're the largest recipient of NSF dollars. Big university, research one. 9/11 impacted the University of Illinois and many other higher ed institutions around and across the country, because all of a sudden, all of the grad students who had been coming in from other parts of the world, like China and Thailand, Korea, could not come back into this country because of all of the problems with immigration and so forth that arose from 9/11. So much of our teaching in higher education in the STEM fields was being done by international students that 9/11 had a tremendous impact. Think about that. We are dependent on students outside our nation to teach our STEM fields, and we have totally neglected populations in this country, and we're still not looking at them as resources for STEM. This is at a time when other countries are catching up in the STEM fields. We're not showing progress, but it's not because we're decreasing or declining. It's because other countries are catching up and moving ahead of us. And I'm going to show you that in just a minute. So are you with me in terms of this new flattening world and the importance of the STEM fields? Let me show you Hispanics in the sciences. So you can look at Hispanic share of employment in selected occupations. This is from the Pew Hispanic Center. If you look at the Hispanic share of employment in selected occupations, the five highest and the five lowest. Hispanics, and these include immigrants and third generation and so forth. The Hispanic population is very diverse, but when you look at them in terms of ethnicity, 40% of the farming, fishing, and forestry occupations are held by Hispanics. 30% of the building, grounds, cleaning, maintenance are held by Hispanics, and so forth. Now look at the lowest proportions of Hispanics in the fields that that is demonstrated. Architecture and engineering. 6% of architects and engineers in this country can be identified as Hispanic. 5.6% of the computer and math science workforce is Hispanic. 5.5% of the healthcare professionals can be identified as Hispanic. And 4.8% of the life, physical, and social sciences can be identified as Hispanic. That is at a time when Hispanics are now the largest minority, making up almost 14 or 15% of the U.S. population. Look at the big disparity. If Hispanics are 15% of the total U.S. population, and they're going to grow even more, they're at about 4-5% of the workforce in the science fields. In fact, in some states, it's 3%, it's 4%. So that out of 100 engineers, 4 or 5 are Hispanic. Out of so many microbiologists and biochemists, 3 or 4 of 100 are Hispanic. And I have lived with a microbiologist, a miracle microbiologist, so I've been very aware of the science field and the growth and the lack of growth in those fields. So we have a lot of work to do in terms of science teaching and math teaching. A decade ago, when we were just beginning to wake up, even before 9/11, we were beginning to wake up to the gaps and the voids in science achievement. The National Science Education Standards stated that all students, regardless of age, sex, cultural, ethnic background, disabilities, aspirations, interest, and motivation, should have the opportunity to attain high levels of scientific literacy. This is a wonderful statement about science equity. All students will be able to attain high levels of scientific literacy. But if you look at what was happening across the country and in comparison to other countries, already, and this is from the Trends in Math and Science Education Statistics, TIMSS, when you look at fourth grade students in 2003 and 1995, that statement that I showed you was 1996. Well, if you compare then when TIMSS is done, 95, 2003, and there will be another TIMSS taking place in 2007, the United States at the fourth grade level, our students decreased in terms of science achievement at the fourth grade level during that period of time. At the time that the standards movement was gaining strength and popularity, we're talking about improving science for everybody. In comparison to the rest of the world, our students are dropping in science at the fourth grade level. In eighth grade science, that was the case. People across the country really took note of this because we can no longer talk about we have a first-class educational system, because there were other countries that were, if you want to call it, beating us, outdoing us in terms of science and math. And it's those countries that I was telling you, it's not necessarily that we're decreasing significantly, those countries are catching up and going full force. Thailand, India, China, producing and looking to produce many scientists and engineers, with universities there already rivaling some of our programs, such as those at MIT and so forth. So we can't be complacent, and we really can't be smug about the state of STEM education in this country, because if we do turn a complacent ear, I think we could be outrun in the future. When we look at math and science courses at the high school level, and we look at those five different groupings, if you focus on the Hispanic group like I do, at the advanced math, 31% of the students from Hispanic backgrounds complete advanced math courses. They do a little bit better in science, but this doesn't tell us what they end up doing in higher education. And I want to make note here that some of the science and math teaching that needs the most reform is in higher education. Higher education for a long time has looked down its nose at K-12. I think some exciting stuff goes on in K-12. We need to reform higher education science and math teaching. We're not turning out the scientists and mathematicians at the tertiary level. But all of this is to say that all of us in education need to work together for that pipeline to send students from pre-K all the way to college completion and advanced studies. There's no time or room anymore for looking for who to blame, what part of the pipeline to blame. All of us need to work together. And there's lots of need for reform in undergraduate classrooms, especially at the university level. When you look at Texas's achievement in science, and we already have a fifth grade science test, and although I don't like to say that I'm glad the test is in place, I have to say it because I think it could lead to some reform in science teaching. It may drive some needed improvements. But if you look at Hispanics and ELL Hispanic background students, their performance on the recent tax was showing that same gap that we're talking about at the national level. On the 2005-2006 tax, the performance rate was about 58% when you average it out, compared to a 67% statewide average and an 81% for European American students. When you look at the next bullet, and that bullet is about the performance of ELL students, they scored lower than any other subgroup, lower than special education, economically disadvantaged, and at-risk kids. I can tell you why that happened at some schools, because they were being tested in English, and they had not instruction in Spanish. That's part of the reason, but then I don't know what other reasons there are. You know more about them than I do. And then finally, science tax at grades 5, 8, and 10 will figure into adequate yearly progress. And so there will be growing attention to science in Texas, and schools will be evaluated on that basis.
Thank you for listening to IDRA Class Notes. For more information on IDRA and other Class Notes topics, go to www.idra.org. You can also send us your thoughts by email to podcast@idra.org or fill out the form on our podcast webpage at www.idra.org/podcasts.